Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
It's not piggybacking on what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is your show for Wednesday, May 26th. I'm your host, Tyler Jett. And today we're going to try to have some fun. Sometimes we pretend like we're having fun. Today we're actually going to have fun. We're just doing an all baseball, all the time podcast. Specifically, we're going to be previewing the SEC tournament, which starts today with UF playing at 4:30. They're going to play against LSU. So we're going to get into all of that. And we actually brought out the big guns for today. Introducing from GatorCountry.com, their baseball beat writer, a man who described himself as willing to have Jason Hayward's baby. That is Cody Jones.
The offer still stands, by the way, just in case.
In case Jason's listening?
Yeah, and I'm sure he does.
All right, I don't know how that'll work, but Cody's a man, as you can judge by the deepness of his voice and the fact that his name's Cody, but he does want to have to get Jason Hayward's baby. No homo, I'm assuming?
Correct.
No homo, okay. And also, he is the Alligator's other baseball beat writer along with me, and that is Anthony Chang.
What's up, everybody?
All right, let's get started off with last weekend. UF clinched the SEC regular season championship. The real championship. If you think about this tournament coming up, it should be fun. But, I mean, I think if you want to measure or a good parameter for what the real title is, I think it's the regular season. Would you agree with me on that?
Absolutely, yeah. It's kind of hard to judge sometimes. You get a little weekend with a bunch of teams playing each other. It kind of sometimes depends on who the hot team is. But I think that's probably the best way to do it over the course of the season, playing all the teams except for one, depending on how that schedule lines up. So I'd agree that's probably the way to do it. I think that's the way that the NCAA committee looks at it as well, as that being the most important thing.
Okay, and so, it really came down, it was a pretty awesome weekend because it came down to the best two teams of the conference happened to play each other last weekend. That was UF and South Carolina. Florida travels to Columbia and really goes in there and wins the first two games. Both really well-played games on both sides. It was a lot of fun to watch. UF drops the third game, but at that point they already clinched it, and it was just a joke of a third game. Let's kind of talk about, why they were so successful. I know the first day they won 3-2 in a game that I think the bullpen just played phenomenal.
Yeah, the bullpen played a big part in that first game. I think Angelos went 3.1 innings, right?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't last. I don't know exactly what it was, but yeah, I mean, for your Friday night ace, who was actually pitching on Thursday because the series is a little bit different because of the last weekend of the season. I mean, so for your ace to only go three innings or whatever, I mean, that's not what you want in a huge series like that. But the bullpen really stepped up.
Yeah, and Barfield came in for Pantelotis, I think in the fourth, and bases loaded, one out, strikes out the first two batters he hits. So that was nice to see. And Chapman obviously kept doing what he was doing and pitched, I think, what was it, 3.2 innings, I think, this whole in the series. And 3.2 scoreless innings, was it?
I don't know.
He had two multi-inning saves, though. So that was
kind of cool. Talk about, what did you think about, they brought Chapman in to start the eighth inning in the biggest game of the year.
Not even that. I think it all goes back to that fourth inning. I think that might have been maybe the biggest thing of this entire season. You look at that Barfield's outing. That was the game that probably gave him the momentum to either team, depending on who won it. And they come in and base a little one out against their two best hitters with Whit Merrifield and Jackie Bradley. Get two strikeouts, I think, was just massive for him and kind of for the confidence of the bullpen overall throughout the entire weekend. It kind of got them going, and a guy like Paco Rodriguez comes in next and gets some big outs as well. But Chapman was just outstanding, SEC pitcher of the week from that outing. And not only the way he pitched, but I think it was a great sign to see him get back-to-back outings on days like that with multiple innings each time to show that during the postseason he's able to do that and that his arm is good to go. And the velocity was still there in the mid-90s, and I don't think there's any doubt he made himself some money this weekend with the draft coming up next month.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he doesn't throw a lot, but he throws that heat. He throws it pretty well. Barfield obviously looked excited. Conan, I mean, that's his thing. Jeff Barfield's thing is to come in, and every game he comes in with runners in scoring position, and every time you ask him what he's doing, he says the same thing. What's he say, Cody?
It's not his fault. He can't think about it.
That's always every time. You go in, it's like, the base is loaded. What are you thinking? I just tell myself it's not my fault. And then I look at it, and then I realize, you know what? It's not my fault. And then I go out there, and I strike out the batters, and then we win the game. So he's a very simple man. He's coming through.
All kidding aside, though, he's done a great job all year. Just come in, and extinguishing the fire with runners on scoring position. He comes in and shuts them down.
So. Real good movement on his pitches.
Exactly.
He was even the guy last year that was the Friday night starter for a couple of weeks. He's been really versatile in his 2 years here out of junior college. He's a senior now. I think that's been just really valuable. He's a guy that pounds the strike zone, and we saw that with those off-speed pitches. When you throw consistent strikes like that, it's really hard for the hitters to get a grip on a guy like him coming out of the bullpen, and you saw that obviously this weekend, especially on Thursday.
And Toledo, again, he was only two scoreless innings, I think, this weekend. And what do you guys think about that? You think that'll be another option late in the game to come in?
I think they like his role there now. I mean, that kind of like utility guy. If they need four straight games, maybe he could get that start in that fourth game. But they like him right now getting multiple innings out of the bullpen. And I think he's getting a lot more comfortable with it as well. I think I was really mostly impressed with him, with his mental ability to come back from that injury. He's been lights out ever since and never really he's given up, I think, a couple hits since he's been back and had some outings where he gave up some hits and got himself and put runners in scoring position. But at the same time, he's bounced back and the strikeout numbers are still there. I think it's great just to see the progress he's made in the short time he's been back.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he's allowed to run in the, I say, 6-7 innings he's pitched so far since coming back, so you know, that's a good sign.
Yeah, and then kind of moving on, let's talk about the offense a little bit. I mean, this is definitely a big game. Like it felt different watching these games versus games earlier in the season, especially Georgia, which was my least favorite weekend in the season, which everyone knows at this point. But this, I mean, it was intense. There's a lot of fans, well-pitched on both sides, but the offense came through with the right hits at the right time. Talk about that a little
bit. I think that was the biggest part, because that's what you're going to see more as the season goes on. You're not going to see the blowout games of midweek teams from now on. You're going to see those tight ball games with good pitching, good defense, and then timely hits is what you need. And that's what this offense has really just been doing this whole season, is whenever that big situation is. We saw Josh Adams with the big two-out double, running on second, third. Tyler Thompson strikes out with one out, and Adams picks it up.
Tyler Thompson struck out.
Surprise. Yeah,
he's actually struck out twice already during this podcast.
He's in batting practice right now. He's striking out.
So that was really just a clutch hit for Adams. Preston Tucker's triple on Friday, I believe it was, to tie the game, just a huge hit. This team has just been really getting the right hits at the right time. It's not an offense that's going to blow anybody away, but it's really those timely hits, which with a young team is really impressive, I think, as the season winds down.
Yeah, and Tucker's triple came with a full count, mm-hmm. and Adams' game-winning hit came with a full count on Friday, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge. I mean, you did an article for Tuesday's Alligator that you kind of talked about Josh Adams and how he's, I mean, we kind of talked about it before earlier in this podcast, that he's really struggled this year, draft eligible. I think that might have had a factor with it. But, I mean, really bounced back this weekend. And you got to talk to him. What did he say?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely nice to see him bounce back this weekend. He went 6-for-13, 5 RBIs over the weekend. Picked up his first 2 3-hit games in conference play, and only his third and fourth multi-hit games in conference play, which is pretty amazing when you think about it, for a guy that was 2-time All-SEC player. But when I talked to him, he said that what's really helped him is he's trying to hit the ball to opposite field, which is, he said, kind of went away from after hitting 2 home runs in the first game of the year. He kind of tried to do too much and tried to be too much of a power hitter. But he said starting to come around. So it's a good sign that he's hitting the ball to right field and, you know, taking what the pitcher gives him and has having that approach at the plate. I think 4 of his 6 hits over the weekend were to right field. So, I mean, that's a good sign. So we'll see what he does now if he carries that into the SEC tournament.
Yeah, I guess if there's one time to really step up, I mean, now would be that time. This would be the optimum time for you. I mean, if you can do bad all year, or if you can do bad or good in the postseason, one, you'll probably make some money off of that, and two, your team will love you for that. But one thing I do find interesting is anytime you talk to a player, they say, like, why are you not doing good? I'm just not hitting the ball the opposite field. And once they start doing good, why are you doing good? I'm just hitting the ball. I'm hitting the ball the opposite field. So it's like, why don't you do that more? And like, yeah. They're just like, well, I just need to do it. And that, I mean, they never say anything more substantial than that. So I don't know if I'm buying it completely or not, just because they always say that. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's interesting with Adams because he's a guy that when he's been going good the past 2 years, he's been getting those hits to the right side of the field. Mm-hmm. He's been hitting the ball the other way with authority, too. That's what you saw in those 2 doubles he hit this weekend. Was a short hop, I believe, a 380 sign in right center. So that power is starting to come back to that side of the field. And that's that really is when he's going at his best, is when he's not trying to hit the home runs. And when you come up in clutch situations, I know the 3-run homer he hit off Anthony Renato against LSU a couple weeks came on, I believe, a 2-0 or 3-0 count. When you get in counts like that, you can do that and pull off on a ball and try to hit it 400 feet to your pole side. But when you get in maybe a 2-strike count, like you were saying with that 3-2 count, he had the double on, all the fans standing up looking for the strikeout. But when you focus on hitting the ball the other way, it seems like they're a lot more confident. In him in particular, a guy that's 2-time All-SEC the past 2 seasons, he's really getting going when he hits the ball the opposite field. And that's, I think, a huge sign you saw this weekend.
Yeah, he said that ever since high school, he's been that type of hitter that, you know, he's not much of a pole hitter. He's better when he takes the ball to opposite field. So, I mean, he keeps doing that, I think, you know, he'll be fine. And that'll make a big impact on the team's offense because, I mean, he's been struggling all year long, basically. 8 spot, 9 spot, 2 spot, 6 spot. So
He's been struggling no matter what. They put him everywhere. He's not bad, is what you're trying to say.
Exactly. So I guess we'll see where O'Sullivan puts in the lineup. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, at, I guess, the sixth spot. Or, I mean, what do you guys think?
I think a big credit to him, first of all, is that his glove has still been there. He's always been a great fielder. And I know the number of errors he had last year is a little higher, but he's a little uncomfortable at third base. But his glove has just been phenomenal this year, regardless of how he does on offense. Mm-hmm. But with him coming back to the offense, it really is almost like a midseason trade or something like that for an MLB team. You're getting a two-time All-SEC guy in his freshman and sophomore years coming back into your offense, swinging the bat the way that he has been. I think it really kind of moves that offense up a little bit heading into the postseason, which is really big for them, as you're obviously going to be facing better pitchers and better guys out of the bullpen as well. So I think that's a really big shot in the arm for him. But I think that's kind of where they'll keep him, is like you said, Anthony, that 6-7 range of the lineup, just because the bottom of the lineup has kind of struggled a little bit this year. So he's a guy that gives stability down there, whereas you've got a pretty set top five right now with going Fontana, Dendecker, Tucker, Maddox, and Johnson. You really like those top five that have been pretty consistent throughout the whole time. I think six is really a good spot for Adams right now.
Yeah, and what's interesting, I thought, was when you came into the season, and I think we'll actually touch on this in a second, is what we thought before the season started, but I remember thinking there's three bats that I'm really confident in for this team. I didn't want to think about any of the freshmen. You can't be confident in a freshman before he actually plays, which actually contradicts my column a little bit that I ran on Tuesdays. I wrote a column on Tuesday saying that you shouldn't be shocked by it, and I agree you shouldn't be shocked, but at the same time, if I'm coming in and I'm going to bank on something, I don't know if I'm going to bank on the freshman. But the three players I was most confident in were Matt Dendecker, Preston Tucker, and Josh Adams, specifically Adams. And we're going to touch on this in a second, but he made me look like a fool pretty much all season. But what's big is that, like, obviously he's come in and he hasn't been doing good all year, but you've had the freshman step up. You've had Nolan Fontana step up. You've had Austin Maddox step up, obviously, leads the team in home runs. You had Brian Johnson step up, which was probably the biggest surprise of the season, in my opinion. But you had those five guys now, if you include Tucker and Dendecker, who are still doing well. Your offense is sitting pretty when you have five guys you can feel confident about. And if Adams can step up too, that's huge.
Yeah, I mean, Adams was hitting .221 before the South Carolina series, so he was basically, he wasn't productive at all. So just having him to get, even if he just hits .300 in the postseason, that's a big upgrade over to what he has been giving you the whole year.
And he was at that. I know his freshman year hit .330, and then his sophomore year hit around .350. So that is a kind of definition of consistency. I think most people would have agreed with you on that, Tyler. Yeah. He was the most consistent guy coming in. So you look at that, and then the season he's having now, or I think he's about .230, .240 right now after the weekend. His I believe it was after the Georgia series, his career average was down to about .302. Think about that, after hitting .330, .350. That really speaks, I think, a huge volume as to how much he has been struggling this year, and kind of ashamed that his average did drop that far after the great first 2 years that he had.
Yeah.
Draft eligibility. I'm telling you, it's a draft eligibility.
It's killer.
I actually wrote an article previewing this past weekend and basically talked about how Matt Dendecker had really bounced back from his junior year, and he kind of he said it multiple times that, like, you know, when you become draft eligible and you have that chance, you might start pressing a little bit. He said he did that. And so in that article, I also kind of touched on Adams, and I had talked to Josh earlier this season about whether or not that had been a factor, and he said it wasn't a factor, but I don't think it's a coincidence that once he got to his junior year and he was finally eligible for the MLB draft, his average just dipped down incredibly. But let's move on to what I was kind of referring to earlier. Let's play a little game here, and let's go through the whole UF lineup, and let's rate everybody 1 through 10, 1 being we have, like, no confidence in this person. This person, if the game's on the line, might just, like, piss his pants and walk off the field. And if he has complete confidence in him, we'll give him a 10. That's a player you want with the ball in their hand or playing defense or with a bat in their hand at the end of the game. So, and also, I think Anthony has done the service of going back, because we actually played this game at the beginning of the year, me and Bob Colobi, who obviously isn't here anymore, but we can make Bob look like a fool right here, right now. We're going to take the rankings that we gave these players before the season. Cody wasn't here, but Cody, there's no chance you can look like a fool because you don't have to worry about what you said before the season.
I like this game a lot.
You're going to win this game, I think. But we're going to look at what we did before the season, and then we're going to compare that to what we say now. So let's start with starting pitching. What do you think, Cody?
I go with a 6 right now. I think I would normally go higher, but I think there's some question marks right now. And nothing that's really the fault of any players, but I just get a little nervous looking at a team that has two freshmen as two of their three main guys, and you don't really know how they're going to respond to postseason environments. And I think they responded very well this weekend in a postseason environment at South Carolina. So that makes me feel a little bit better, as well as the fact that Alex Panayiotis probably hasn't been as sharp his past couple starts as he was at the beginning of the year. So I go with a 6 there. I'm still fairly confident in that group as a unit. And then obviously the depth of the bullpen as well, I think, helps him out. So I'd go with probably six as the starting pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, they've all done it. They've done their job. You look at their ERAs. The lowest ERA of the three starters, I believe, is Brian Johnson. I think it's in like 3.5, 3.6. That's still better than the best ERA of the starting pitchers last year, which shows how good the team has been. I think the best ERA was somewhere in the fours. So that just shows you how much better the pitching has been from last year. But at the same time, you can't be super confident in them just because none of them are just dominating pitchers. They're guys that will give you 5-6 innings and do pretty solid. I think Hudson had a hot streak where he was going 7-8 innings, and he was pitching really well. He's cooled off a little bit, I think. But like I said, I don't think there's anyone in this – there's nobody in here that's like a Drew Pomeranz, like a Sonny Gray, anybody that I really feel really confident about. Then I think, like, okay, the game's on the line. We're going to let this guy pitch, and he can give us 7 or 8 innings. I think these guys would go about 5 and then the bullpen pick it up. And because of that, I would say starting pitching, I would say a 6 also. I think I'd agree with you on that.
That was kind of the knock on the team going into the season, too, is who do you match up on Friday nights against Pomeranz, Drew Smyly, Sonny Gray, all these really talented pitchers in the SEC? I think Paniello would have stepped up at the beginning of the year to be that guy, but now the confidence, my confidence at least, is down a little bit on him just based on the fact that he really hadn't been as sharp the past couple starts.
We were kind of expecting that. I think me and Cody were talking about it maybe a couple of weeks ago. We were saying we don't know how long Panfilo could keep this up.
As a Friday night starter.
I mean, he has been, and all credit to him, he's been doing really well, but I mean, he just doesn't have the stuff of a Friday night starter to me.
I agree. I think I was reading a scouting report, I think a couple weeks ago, and this is probably one of my favorite things that scouts like to do, is they're talking about Panfilo and said, he's just a guy. I don't know exactly what it means to be just a guy, but I assume what they're saying is he doesn't have the stuff. He doesn't have a really fast fastball. He doesn't get a lot of movement on his pitches. He gets hit pretty hard. You look at how many fly ball outs he has. That's kind of a testament to a little bit of how lucky he is. Look at how many home runs he's given up, too. I think he's given up like 10 or something like that. He's definitely given up the most home runs out of any of the pitchers. And, of course, there was like a stretch where I think he gave up 6 home runs in like 2 games. So that might have made that a little bit of an outlier. But he still gets hit pretty hard for a Friday night guy who you would expect to get a lot of ground ball outs, a lot of strikeouts. He's not going to give you that.
I guess those kind of pitchers will work with the Gators this year just because of how good they've been defensively. So that's kind of helped them a lot, too. Pitches into contact. So he's benefited from that. But, I mean, when you're facing top teams that he's going to be in the future, in the postseason, I mean, I don't know how long he'll last.
So I really think that's the core of this team, like you were just saying, Anthony. You've got guys who pitch to contact and get outs early in the count to keep their pitch count down, or at least that's what they shoot to do. And when you've got with the best defense in the SEC, it really helps you out quite a bit to do that. But at the same time, I think that you run a little risk with that because you've got a team that, as good as the pitching staff has been, I believe it's top 4 in the ERA right now in the SEC, they're still dead last in strikeouts. That's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's guys that pitch to contact. And granted, that's what O'Sullivan preaches. He wants guys to get, I believe they want the guy to get a hit or to hit into an out within the first 3 pitches of the at bat. That's the philosophy they teach. Pound the strike zone and let guys get themselves out. So that's kind of the core of this team, but it does scare you a little bit when you get in there to face some better hitting teams. Like, and say Florida goes to the College World Series and they're facing an offense like an Arizona State or something like that that's been on a tear lately. You know, what are you going to do then? So I think that's the big question right now is as to how good this team is.
Right. I think we've mentioned it. We talked about the defense. It's good. It has the best fielding percentage in the conference. But, like, in my opinion, there's only so much a defense can do. If you're pitching to contact, a little bit of that is you're relying on luck. Because you're sitting there and you say, all right, I want to make sure, like, this guy's going to, here, I'm going to throw it. You hit it. See where you can hit it. And usually you're saying, okay, he's going to hit a ground ball. We've got some good infielders that can take care of it. Hits a fly ball. We have Matt Dendecker out center field who's going to make some great plays. And he has. He's been a phenomenal defensive center fielder. But at the same time, who's to say, I mean, there's not much you can control as far as maybe he pulls a thing down the line. What are you going to do about it? There's not, but I guess my argument is that when you pitch that and you say, all right, hit it, there's not much you can do to prevent it from being a screaming hit down the line versus a soft ground ball to shortstop.
I guess the argument against that would be that it depends on control. And I know that's what the Florida coaches preach big time in that is, as long as you hit your spot, and that's why they'll let some of the freshman catcher Mike Zanino this year, they let him call some of the games because they think that regardless of what he calls, what pitch, and what situation, that if the pitcher executes, that the pitch will still be made, the hitter will still get it off the end of the bat unless he's just guessing for that pitch or something like that. So that I think that's what they think about that, but at the same time, that is still quite a bit of risk in case you hang a pitch or throw a fastball right down the middle on accident or something like that. So there is a lot of risk in there.
Mm-hmm. It's very ballsy. Do we put a ranking on starting pitching in the preseason?
No, we didn't.
We didn't. Okay, so we're both, or at least I'm good on this because I didn't
nailed it.
I didn't predict how they were going to do in the preseason. But let's move on to the catcher position. I know at the beginning of the year we were trying to decide who would be the catcher. And I think I ended up saying I thought Ben McMahon was going to be the catcher.
Yeah.
He was coming off a year where he was 3-for-30, which wasn't good at all by any measure. But he had a good stint in Cape Cod during the summer. He felt confident. He said he was coming back. He was ready to hit. And, I mean, obviously he wasn't starting catcher, so we're not going to talk about him too much. But you got to feel for Ben McMahon because he's hit really well. Like, he hasn't – I mean, he probably should be starting if you think about it. I mean, if he just didn't have a guy who's a little bit better than him in front.
Did you guys find it interesting that he started – I mean, Zunino started Friday night's game. Thursday night's game, but McMahon started Friday and Saturday. I mean, just because he's been so hot at the plate, do you think that continues in the SC tournament, or what would you guys think?
I'm interested. I know they love Zunino a lot. They love what he brings to this team defensively. On Thursday night, Zunino, I believe it was when Panayiotis was pitching. I'm not exactly positive about that, but Zunino jumped up and was kind of holding his thumb again. It was dislocated against Georgia 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And you could tell he wasn't comfortable with the plate the rest of the night. He really just didn't look like Mike Zunino that we've seen all season. And then McMahon was in the next day in the lineup. So I was a little nervous about that just based on if that was probably the biggest game of the year up to that point. That Friday game to clinch the SEC. So I know Zunino was toughing it out to play that first game, but if he couldn't tough it out to play in that second game, I think that was a bad sign for Florida going forward because that was a huge game for them. Obviously, you've got an extremely capable backup in Ben McMahon with the way he's been swinging the bat. But I think there's a lot of question marks around that position right now just based on Zunino, and we don't really know what he's going to do the rest of the year.
Yeah, he hurt his thumb catching a cutter from Paco Rodriguez in the Georgia series. They said, we're not worried about it, but we're not going to play him after it happened. So they were worried about it, even if they said they weren't worried about it. And then, obviously, like you said, started the Thursday game. And then I did notice him jump up a little bit, and I was like, that looks very familiar because it's exactly what happened against Georgia. But yeah, talking about McMahon, he's hitting about 360, I think, right?
Yeah.
You can't measure that with against Dendecker. He's hitting like 362. Dendecker's slightly better than him, but Dendecker's played the whole season versus Max, McMahon hasn't been playing the whole season. But let's talk about Zunino and what he's done this year, just because he's been the starter for, I'd say, 80% of the season, 85% of the season.
Right, somewhere around there. He really has been phenomenal. I love watching him behind the plate. It's one of the things that I think kind of goes unnoticed a little bit with this team is how good he is back there and the fact that he's a freshman, too. I know that's what they loved about him recruiting him. He could swing the bat, and we're starting to see that lately, but it's more about what he does behind the plate. His dad is actually a scout for the Cincinnati Reds and has been for a while, so he's grown up around the game of baseball. And that really, you can tell just watching the way he handles a game, the way he handles the infield during bunt coverages or putting out signs with a first and third situation, a role play they would run if they steal second. He really just takes command of the field as a freshman with a lot of veteran guys on the mound. He knows what they're doing. He puts in a lot of effort and time, and people don't realize he'll get to the field at 11 o'clock or 12 in the afternoon for a 6:30 game just to look at some spray charts and some lineups and just get a better idea. So I think he's been really just one of the unsung heroes of this team and maybe probably a big reason as to why this pitching staff has been so good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like O'Sullivan said, he allows Zunino to call the pitchers, which is pretty impressive for a freshman that, you know, pretty much doesn't have any experience with any of these pitchers before the season. And he's done a great, I think he had like 3 game-winning hits this year. So he's done a great job. It's sad to see him injured at this time of the year because he's been pretty consistent throughout the whole season. But I'd probably give him a 7 for the season.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I like him a lot because the interview skills is probably the best interview on the
That's
team.
That's what I was. Yeah, I love. I mean, I love talking to Mike. I feel like there's a lot of guys on the team that are not that much fun to talk to, honestly. But Mike's one of the guys that's really enjoyable to talk to. You just like. Anytime, even if he's having bad games, if he's having good games, he's always honest, and he's always very talkative. Some people, you say to them, oh, like, what did you see on that home run? Like, or what were you trying to do in that at bat? Or you talk about a specific frame, and they just give you a super generic response. Like, the home run is like, I saw a pitch that was in the inner half, and I decided I was going to pull it, and so I decided to hit it out of the park, and then it did, and it felt pretty awesome. But Mike will give you details. I think part of it is just that Mike is smarter than other people about baseball. Like you were saying, he comes in early and things like that. So that's one of the reasons I like Mike, I'll be honest. But he's also been a pretty good player. I don't think I'd give him a 7. I think I'd give him a 6, maybe a little bit lower, just because he did, for a good part of the season, he wasn't a good hitter. He's been a good defensive catcher all year. I think he only has, like, 2 errors. I mean, he's done a solid job catching. And obviously the coaches like him, which says something about him as a defensive player. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to measure just from watching in the press box. But I think I'd give him a 6 just because he wasn't hitting well for a while, but he started coming along and he's doing pretty well.
One of the things you mentioned about him, even if he has a bad game, he'll still talk to me and be great. that's one of the things the coaches love about him. Is even if he's terrible at the plate, he went through a really bad stretch. He's down to about 210, maybe with his average.
He was flirting with the Mendoza line for a good part of the season.
He was. And he was still awesome behind the plate. He doesn't take his bat to out behind the plate with him. That's what O'Sullivan always says about him. They love what he does behind the plate. But now he's got his average up to about 280. He's been very, very good for them. My only worry now, and that's why I go with a five on him, is I'm a little nervous about that finger. I know he didn't look very good on Thursday night with the bat, even. He'd been seeing the ball really well, but he looked really uncomfortable at the plate. He was taking some bad swings, and part of that was just a credit to Blake Cooper, who was today first-team All-SEC. He's a great pitcher. But he just didn't look the same to me at the plate. So I'm a little nervous about that thumb right now, so I'll go with a five.
But like we were saying earlier, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Zunino in the SC tournament, just because, like we said, they locked up a national seed already. They might as well save him for the regionals, maybe give him a week off and see if that'll help him a little bit.
That's a good point, too. Yeah, I think we will see a lot of McMahon this week and maybe some other backups as they rest some guys. And I know a lot of people are kind of frustrated with the Saturday game. Florida had three starters in the lineup. But again, it's postseason. You've got a young team that's played. They're used to playing 25 games in a high school season, not as long of a season as this is. So I like that. They give some guys some rest, and I think you'll see that this week as well.
And after celebrating the SC title, you honestly think the starters are ready to play Saturday at 4 o'clock?
That's true. They definitely went out that night. Let's go back. Yeah, they did some boat racing. We'll touch on that later. They love boat racing. Let's go back to what I think we were obviously ranking McMahon, but we were also just ranking our confidence in the catcher position.
Exactly.
So what did I end up giving?
Tyler ended up giving the catcher position a 4, and Bobby gave it a 5. So it's pretty accurate.
I was off by 2 on a scale of 1 to 10. So I don't know if it's super accurate. That's a difference. Usually that's the difference between an A and a C in a class, but I mean, whatever. It's hard. It's tough.
Yeah,
I think the reason I wasn't confident was, like we said, we didn't know who was going to be the catcher, and B, none of the catchers that were coming back had ever done good at University of Florida. McMahon had struggled, but I mean, right now, I'm definitely more confident than I was at the end of the year. Moving on to first base, Preston Tucker. What are you guys' thoughts?
I'm going to go with an 8 right now with Tucker, because I'm pretty confident in him. I think my confidence was restored this weekend with that 2-out triple. He's still a very quality hitter. Numbers aren't as ridiculous as they were last season, but they're still there. His average is still above 330. He's another guy. He kind of raises his game in the clutch situations and has really become a very, very good defensive first baseman as well. He's really worked hard on that. He came in and DH last year as a freshman the very first game because they didn't trust him at first base and they didn't really know what he could do over there. But he has worked extremely hard, named today to the All-SEC defensive team, and I think that's a really big credit to his hard as he's worked. So I'm extremely confident in him. And actually, as confident as I am in any other player on the team right now.
Yeah, I'd give him an 8 as well. I think he struggled in the beginning of the year. Not really struggled, but it kind of bothered him a little bit that he wasn't seeing the pitches, as many pitches as he did last season. But I think he's kind of worked around that, and he's not forcing it as much. And especially with Maddox hitting so well behind him, he's gotten, I guess, a little better pitches to hit. So I'd give him an 8, and like Cody said, defensively, he's been solid all season, all SEC defense. So all around, he's had a solid year. I mean, it's kind of overshadowed a little bit by Maddox's numbers, but I mean, you can't take his performance away from him. He's still batting close to 350. He's done a good job this season.
Yeah, I think I'll probably end up giving him an 8 too, just to be boring. But actually, no, I think I'll give him a 7, and I'll explain why in a second. But
Bobby's gonna kill you.
That's probably why Bob Colovi is spinning in his grave right now. He's not really dead, don't worry. Bob, not Preston either. Preston, not dead either. But Preston, like this year, the numbers haven't been as good, like you said. The slugging percentage hasn't been as good, but the on-base percentage has been better. And I think what's interesting is I think as you've seen the season progress, I think you've seen his role in the offense change. At the beginning of the year, it was a carryover from last year when he was the guy, when he led the team in home runs and batting average and RBIs. And he put up insane numbers for a freshman. In an offense that wasn't fantastic, probably, but now he's the number 2 guy, I think. Like, he came in, he kind of said, I'm the man, I need to, like, they're going to be looking to me to come up with some big power hits. Now you have Maddox behind him, who leads the team with 17 home runs and just rakes the deep balls in. Like, he doesn't hit a lot of contact, doesn't draw much walks, but he just rakes out there, and I think Tucker's really changed his role from a guy who hadn't hit the deep ball. Now it's like, okay, you can take walks, get singles. If you get on base before Maddox, there's a good chance that that's 2 runs just because of how proficient Maddox is in the batter's box. And I think because of that, he's ended up changing his role And I think that makes the offense better. Like, how much better is it for the offense if Preston Tucker doesn't do quite as good as the number one guy, but all of a sudden he's the number two guy, and he's a much better number two guy than Florida had last year.
That's a really good point, and that really helps out a lot with Maddox, too, with him, his ability to drive and runs. You've got three guys ahead of him, Fontana, Dendecker, and Tucker, that are all really, really good at getting on base. They all have a great eye at the plate, and Tucker, like you said, has improved that this year. He's gotten even better at that, and he was great at it last year. He was great at pitch recognition, not striking out, putting the ball in play, and especially taking those walks. Well, he's gotten a lot better at it this year. There's a lot of guys on base when Austin Maddox is at the plate, and that is your goal. That's this team's goal as an offense, is to have men on just in case he were to hit a ball 400 feet and then get put maybe a three or four spot on the board for you. So that really is the goal of this offense, and I think they've done a great job at it this year.
Yeah, I think if you say before the season, Preston Tucker's going to be your number two guy, I think anybody would take that. I mean, Preston Tucker's your number two, that's a good luxury.
It's a good offense. Yeah. If you've got Preston Tucker's your second best bat in the lineup.
Exactly.
What did we put last year?
Tyler, you gave him an 8.
Oh! I thought, okay. All right. So I gave him a 7 right now, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I changed it from an 8. I was going to give him an 8, but I changed it to a 7 because I thought earlier in the year I'd given him a 7, and I wanted to line that up perfectly. And I had originally, in that podcast, if you go back and listen, I think it was sometime in February, before the season started, I originally gave him a 7 on that podcast, and then Bob lost his mind and said, "I'm absurd." Yeah, and that's the quote you hear in the theme song. When you hear the theme song, you hear Bob yell, "I'm absurd." It's because he was very upset about it and forgot the English language and called himself absurd, which is actually true. He was absurd. He meant to say that he was irate. He was very upset. But he said he was absurd. And I still, at that time, was like, no, I'm sticking with 7. And then later in that podcast, I changed it to an 8 because I gave someone else a 7, or I gave someone else a 6. And I was like, there's no way this particular player can come within 1 of Preston.
Yeah, you gave the left fielder a 6.
And that's what it was. Okay, I gave I guess whoever was playing left field, I said, that person's a 6. And I was like, there's no way I can give that particular player just one spot below Tucker. So I changed Tucker to an 8, and now I've just shot myself in the foot. I was so close to getting that perfectly right. What did Bob give him?
Bob gave him a 12.
Bob gave him a 12 out of 10.
Logical.
Not totally logical. Actually, at that point, I remember after that podcast, Bob was our editor last semester, and the whole time we were worried after that any time Preston Tucker went off, Bob would have some sort of a headline that would say, like, he is risen, or some sort of really inappropriate reference to Jesus. So we were worried, and Bob kept it in his pants, luckily. Although, I think Bob came to cover a game this season, and Tucker did not hit a home run, but he came close, and Bob almost lost his mind. Like, I thought he was going to get kicked out of the press box for just having a heart attack there. He was just spinning around in his seat like a little kid. But anyway, I love you, Bob, in case you're listening. Let's move on to second base, Josh Adams.
Interesting here. This is the wild card for me. I know we talked about him a lot earlier and what he could do to this offense. I go with a 6 just because I love what he does on defense, if nothing else. I think he would probably stay in the lineup even if he hit 100 this year just because of how good he is on defense, and he's just been phenomenal for them there. But I think I go with a 6 just based on the fact that I really liked how he looked this weekend. He looked a lot more comfortable. He looked a lot more like the Josh Adams of the past two seasons. So I'm fairly confident in him right now. It didn't come in blowout games. It came in key situations as well. So I'll go with a 6 right now.
I'd give him a 5 just because, he's been good defensively and everything. And I made a big deal about writing an article on Adams' recent success. But it's been 2 games. So I don't want to be too excited about it. I want to see how he does in the season.
You want to be too excited about it, but you know better than to get too excited about it.
I've seen him have a good string of games before this year, maybe like 1 or 2 games. So I mean, he looked really. It was really encouraging to see him take the ball the other way and get those critical doubles. But I would like to see him continue it, and I mean, then maybe I'll give him a higher number. But for now, I'll give him a 5.
Yeah, I think I give him a 6. Obviously, defensively, he's been fantastic on a great defense. Overall, as a team, he's been one of the most important playing up the middle, along with Nolan Fontana, who we'll touch on in a second. Just giving a 6, not consistent enough. There's not really more to talk about that. What did I give him last year?
A 9.
Oh, yeah, man, that was the guy I was most confident in the season before the season started.
Understandably so.
Yeah. Bobby gave him a 9 as well.
Yeah. So. He was a 2-time All-SEC selection as a freshman and sophomore. I didn't see the junior slump coming, which I should have seen because I had said something about, I had written about Matt Dendecker and how Dendecker had actually struggled during his slump, and I think we've already talked about this on the podcast once already. But, I mean, I should have seen the junior slump at least coming and maybe tamed myself, curbed my enthusiasm down to like a 7 or an 8, but I was a fool. I was young. I was in love. I'll give him a 6. Moving on to third base. Beginning of the year, we were talking about Bryson Smith, but that's obviously changed. We've gone on to Austin Maddox. So, Cody, try to keep it in your pants. Proceed to talk about Austin.
It's going to be hard, but I'll go with an 8 here. I really like what he does over there. The thing that keeps me from going maybe even a little higher than 8 is the defense has been questionable. Might be a compliment on the defense.
What about the base running?
I love the way he runs.
Yeah, he's not a blazer. We'll say that.
What's great, I made this comment earlier in this year, is what's great about Austin Maddox's base running is it looks awkward, but you watch every stride individually, and each one is unique. Like, it's not like he just kicks his leg out left like crazy, or he just overextends his legs, or he runs really short-legged, or he just pumps his arms weird. It's like, one step, his right arm would just go flying off to the right. The next step, his right leg would just kick back insane. The next step, his left arm would go flying to the right also, like across his body. The next step, his left leg would just kick across his body. The next step, his left leg will kick way back. Like, there's no prediction to it, and it's just a lot of fun to watch. But if you're trying to fill the track team, he's not on it, unless you're doing shot put.
I guess the bright side of that is it all sounds correctable, right? Like, he's not fast. I don't think he'll ever be a plus runner by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
He's a smart base runner, but I think they could at least get him to average. But it seems like...
They could at least get him to the point where he's running like I was back when I was in sixth grade, running a mile.
Symmetrical, at
least. There should be some sort of rhythm to it.
But obviously, he's the run producer. He's what everybody loves at the plate. He's the guy you want up in key situations with runners in scoring position. So I give him an 8 based only on the bat and nothing else. So that speaks a lot for how good the bat has been. The glove has a lot of work to do. If it's hit to his left, it's almost a guaranteed hit. And if it's hit to his right, it's pretty much a foul ball because that's where he stands. It's almost on the line and in place there. He's got a great arm, though, but it's
a cannon. I remember, I think the scouting report on him is that he could throw about 95 miles per hour or something ridiculous like that. He pitched a little bit in high school as a prospect.
And he was the best high school catching arm rated by Baseball America last year coming out for the draft. So... obviously, the arm is no question. It's just a matter of lateral movement and getting
fluidity.
The ball to his left. And, yeah, fluidity as well.
I'd give him an 8 as well. Obviously, he's been a catalyst to this offense. 17 homers, like we said earlier. But I wouldn't give him higher because of the defense that Cody said and also his lack of patience at the plate. I mean, I know it hasn't hurt him this year so far, but I think 3 walks is pretty ridiculous when you think about it. He's pretty much, I think he's played every game but one, which is the last game in the South Carolina series this season. To only get 3 walks as a power hitter is pretty insane. I've never seen anything like that before. But again, it hasn't hurt him this year. But, you know, it could come back to bite him. You know, one of these games is facing a dominant pitcher. So I give him an 8.
Yeah, I think obviously the defense is the key here. And I think we were talking about this a couple weeks ago. Is obviously this team's very young. They're the number one recruiting class according to Baseball America last season. For the incoming freshmen, the guys that are freshmen right now. And so they're all going to be back next year mostly. And I was saying, well, what are the things that they really need? And one of the top 2 or 3 things they need is a good defensive third baseman, in my opinion. He committed like 10 errors this year. The other guy who was that third base, Bryson Smith, who's a transfer, he came in. He's expected to play third base for them, but the defense has just been almost just as bad, if not worse. He's committed 8 errors, and I think he had less chances. Bottom line is that they had a lot of errors on the third base, and if they can get someone good defensively, that would be good. And I guess my only comment about the running, I mean, I love to make fun of it, you don't have to run when you're hitting home runs, so it's not that big of a deal. I'm going to give him an 8. I think him and Tucker are the two guys I'm most confident in.
Yeah.
And before the season, I think I was rating Bryson Smith, but what did I give him?
You gave Bryson Smith a 6. Bobby gave him a 6, too.
So whatever.
Not bad.
Fine. Going on to shortstop now, Nolan time. Nolan Fontana. Everybody.
I'm going to go with a 7 here. It would be a lot higher if you weren't a freshman. I still just get antsy about guys late in the season playing this many games, getting a little tired. I know they're trying to do as much as they can to offset that by giving them off days and days off practice and days off games as well and kind of resting some of these freshmen. That's my worry. I love what he does at the plate. I think before the season, not on this podcast, but I did say that I thought he would have a Preston Tucker-like impact to this lineup. I don't know if you could justify it's been that big. But he's just been a very big catalyst for this offense. I love what he does at the top of the lineup. I love his eye for the strike zone. It's really impressive. There's a point at the beginning, I want to say after the first month or so of the year, he had the most walks on the team. A guy that's had 2 home runs as of right now, had the most walks on the team. That's unbelievable.
I think he has like the second most right now, too. I think he is behind Preston. Preston gets walks like it's his job, but Nolan gets a ton of walks as well. What does he have?
He is actually the team leader right now. I didn't realize that. He has 41 right now compared to Tucker's 39.
He leads the team in walks, and with 2 home runs And look at his batting average. What's his batting average?
He's hitting .284 right now.
So he's not, I mean, that's a good average, but it's not something that she would sit there and say, we need to avoid this kid. They're pitching, they would much rather pitch to him and make him hit the ball than for him to draw walks, but that's how patient he's been.
Yeah, what's his on base percentage?
It's .429. Yeah. Three out of every seven at plate appearances, he's getting on base. That's unbelievable.
That's really good.
Especially for a freshman with like his knowledge of the strike zone. I think that's what they knew coming in, that it was very good. But there were some questions as to would it translate and be that good at the college level when you're seeing better arms, better off-speed pitches. But it really has been from the very beginning. It has been that good.
Yeah, I think at the beginning of the year, towards after the first couple of weeks, like you were saying, when he started leading the team on walks, Anthony, I think you wrote an article on Nolan.
Yeah.
And I think in the article you were pushing, like, this guy should be hitting leadoff, because at the time Matt Dendecker was, and Dendecker's obviously a very good batter. He's hitting second now. He's one of the best bats on the team, obviously.
But
he wasn't drawing walks.
Yeah.
And then after we wrote that article, Kevin O'Sullivan moved Nolan Quintana up to first. And I like to think that it was the Independent Florida Alligator that he was reading. Either that or the SIDs were reading it. And they're like, you know, Kevin, I mean, you could probably move Nolan up to leadoff, and that'd be good for your offense. And he thought, you know what, let's do it. I think the Vanderbilt weekend was the first week he did it, and he was just drawing walks like nobody's business.
Yeah. Yeah, at the time, I think Matt Van Decker, I mean, he still was batting over 300, but he was leading the team in strikeouts, and from a leadoff position, that's not really what you want. But, I mean, I would give Fontana an 8, surprisingly, just because ever since he's moved to the leadoff position, I feel like the offense has been a lot more productive. So I think it's really important to the offense. So for that, and plus two errors on defense, arguably been one of the best defensive shortstops in the nation as a freshman. I mean, I see no reason but to give him an 8, so I'll give him that.
I'll give him a 7. I think his defense has obviously been great. Only two errors on the shortstop. Fantastic. Obviously, he's great at drawing walks. But my only thing is, like, this is all measured by the game's on the line. And if he's up the bat with the game on the line, I feel good about him drawing a walk, but I don't feel good about him, like, okay, we need a game-winning hit, we need a game-changing hit. I don't see him providing that. Although, I think at one point, a couple of weeks ago, he was leading the SEC in doubles in conference. And, I mean, so he's hitting pretty well, but, I mean, still, it's not a fantastic hitter.
No, but, I mean, the one thing I'll say about that is he rarely strikes out, so you can count him for having a productive at-bat.
Right.
I mean, he might not get that game-winning double or anything, but...
I want the game-winning double. I don't want the productive at-bat. If you see 15 pitches and you still get out at the end of the day,
yeah, I know.
Game's over, bro.
I know, but I mean, I wouldn't mind having him at the plate just because I know he's not a strikeout hitter. So I would have confidence in him to at least have contact or move the runners over or poke a single through the infield. You know, I don't know. Just I have confidence in him at the plate.
I think that's what makes him a great college shortstop, too, and a guy that I think you can pencil in the lineup here for a four-year career at Florida. He's not dripping with ridiculous power or really good speed. He's just really good at what he does. He knows what kind of player he is. He's a guy that is going to have that high on-base percentage because, like you said, he's not a guy that drives the ball a ton. He knows his spot in this offense. Same thing on defense. He doesn't make unbelievable Ozzie Smith plays at shortstop. He's just really good at the routine plays, and he'll make some of the spectacular ones, but he knows the player he is, and he's very good at executing that, and it really has helped this team a lot.
He's a self-described hard-nosed player. Also, what I like about Nolan is I'm convinced that he just tries to, like, when we do interviews with him, he's just trying to say the funny things that aren't true just to mess with Josh Adams. Because at the beginning of the year, wasn't it when he was saying that he called Josh Adams his big brother and Josh Adams called him his little brother? And then Josh later was just like, that's never happened.
I actually threatened to fight him about that.
Really?
Clearly, as a joke. But you know, I mean, you know what you get out of Fontana.
Yeah.
He's solid. But I actually remember after he signed with Florida, I talked to O'Sullivan about him, and the quote actually was that he's the type of player that leads a team to Omaha. And I don't think anybody expected that to be his first season with Florida, but it certainly looks like that could be the case.
Do you think that was more of a testament to his personality, the way that he played the game? Like, because obviously when you're recruiting him, you obviously can see this kid's not going to be your number four hitter, and he's not going to be stealing a ton of bases, but I guess he just saw like this type of player that you want, a good, hard-nosed player.
Exactly.
Do it. Also, one other thing I want to touch on, his little run-ins with Josh Adams, was when we did an article, a girl for our paper wrote an article about the different music that everyone plays, like, in every sport, talk to gymnastics and like all the time that goes into the routines and stuff. They talked to Nolan Fontana, and Nolan said, yeah, me and Josh Adams listened to Our Song by Taylor Swift before every game. And we actually ran that in the paper. Like, the girl ran it. And the whole time I was like, oh, you should probably talk to Josh about that. I don't know if that's true. But I love Nolan for it. I love Nolan for the fact that he's going to say that kind of stuff.
Wow.
What did I say? What did we say before the shortstop?
You and Bobby both gave him a 4. So, I think what we've learned from doing these ratings so far is that the freshmen have been a lot better than we expected.
Yeah, no,
so
I think this is actually good because it does show that, and it actually shows that I was a fool at the time, which actually led me to the column that I wrote today, which was kind of like, you shouldn't, if the team's young, the players are young, that doesn't mean that you should sit there and say they have no chance to impact. You shouldn't be surprised when a freshman has an impact because of where they play.
Well, I was listening to the podcast saying these ratings back when you guys did them. You did say, Tyler, that you said, I would not give a freshman more than a 5.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, that's fair. I'd probably do the same thing, but I think it was interesting that you said that just because...
Yeah, and then obviously I wrote this column today. It completely contradicts what I said 3 months or 4 months ago. But I will say, I like to think that I've grown through watching this team. I think it's been a growing experience to watch this team. And honestly, I would say watching this team has completely changed my mind because they're all freshmen.
Yeah.
And part of it is that I got tired of everyone talking about them all being freshmen. That got annoying. But also, just they play really, really well as freshmen. And so that just proved to me, I mean, it doesn't really matter if you're a freshman, you can come in and play.
Just kind of a side note on that. I know that's one of the reasons O'Sullivan recruited a lot of these guys is they all have very successful high school programs.
Right.
I'd say about 80% of them did. They all played in state championship games, all those kind of guys. It's the same, kind of the same model you look at the football team in the way that they recruit and kind of what they want out of kids that know how to win. And that's what you're seeing a lot of these guys that played on the same AAU travel teams that won national championships, that type of stuff. It's guys that with winning pedigrees that know how to win and know what their job is to a team.
Yeah, and when you say winning pedigrees, what you mean is that they play, they're so used to winning that they really get upset and it's like shocking when you lose. And like I can remember playing on certain teams where like, in Little League and even going beyond that, playing in high school, like certain teams, you start getting on that role of winning and you start approaching things differently. Whereas also been on teams where you lose and you kind of come into games and you're like, well, yeah, let's try to win. But then as soon as the other team scores a touchdown on you early, all of a sudden you're just like, all right, well, there's going to be another game like that. And by getting kids that are so used to winning, then I think that really helps. Also, like I was touching in my column, like Austin Madge was playing in tournaments in Venezuela and Alberta. Like he was playing in huge tournaments.
Yeah.
Across the world, I don't think that him going and making that trip to Lexington, Kentucky, or Athens, Georgia is really that intimidating. As much as we like to say, this is the SEC, how intimidating is that? I don't think it's, I mean, I think that when you've been trained to do that, I think you can step in and adjust pretty easily.
And Fontana was on that team too. That's the other thing. I mean, these guys are used to it, and they're used to traveling all over the world, and that's why they're getting invited to now the Team USA for college kids,
right?
Freshmen and sophomores after their season, and they're all freshmen again. So it really is just unbelievable. See the composure that they have, but it's not really a surprise even.
Yeah. All right, moving on to left field. It's been a lot of people at left field. I guess Tyler Thompson's been in left field.
Tyler's been in for most of the year, so.
Yeah, who else?
Jonathan Pickett it a little bit. I don't think Cam Washington ever played as
there. Cam was a right fielder, but yeah. I don't really want to touch on it too much. I'm going to say 3. I'm going super harsh. That's the way I am. These are men. They can handle it. Tyler Thompson hasn't been good. Look at his strikeout rates. It's pretty insane. No one strikes out as good as Tyler Thompson strikes out.
I just don't understand how he still is batting 280.
He's 268 now.
268? Oh, okay.
All right.
That still seems 100 points.
Yeah, like, you think, by watching a guy all season, you think he's batting, like, 200. You think?
Obviously, we've pretty much seen every game.
Yeah.
And I do want to say this. On Thursday in South Carolina, he did hit a solo home run. To which I texted Cody. I said, what just happened? And Cody responded and said, big-time players meant big-time plays and big-time games. And that's what he was doing. But honestly, I think that was the first I can't remember another hit he's gotten. I think he gets hits when we're not paying attention. Like, maybe when we go up in the press box to get food or something, we come down, he's on first base, and he must have got a single. He sneaks singles in every once in a while. You look at it, he's like a 1-for-4 day or like a 2-for-6 day. And they're these singles that you don't even notice that happen, and that's really it.
And sometimes in blowout games, too. That's when there's no pressure on.
Right.
That's why I think...
You can go 5-for-6 against USF.
Only because we can't get negative numbers. I think I might go with a 2 or something like that.
I'm glad I was in the lowest.
I've just lost completely all confidence in
him. Yet he's still in the lineup.
Exactly, which is kind of a tragedy. 45 strikeouts in 123 at-bats. That's borderline Riley Cooper territory.
Not very good.
What's his slugging? I don't know what you guys were saying something
earlier. His slugging percentage, this is at the Georgia game, we were looking at the stats, and his slugging percentage was a little bit lower than Josh Adams, and his batting average is like 100 points higher than Josh Adams.
Yeah, okay, he's slugging .366, Adams at .397. Thompson is hitting .268 as his average, and Adams is .237.
That's not good at all by any stretch of the imagination. He's a single guy, I guess. He gets singles.
He has 6 extra base hits and 123 at-bats.
6 extra base hits all season. How many home runs is that? That's 1 or 2 home runs.
It's 2 of each.
2 home runs, 2 doubles.
And 2 triples.
Ah, that's great.
Those home runs are both solo home runs. At Florida State and Jacksonville was the other one.
Okay.
They both gave Florida 1-0 lead. I just don't see it. I don't know what he brings to the lineup that Jonathan Pigott can't do.
Yeah, and as a good recruiting class they had, they don't have. I mean, they really didn't bring in. I mean, I guess Cam Washington, which we'll touch on in a second, he's out for the season, but he was really the only outfielder that's come in and had an impact. And you got to figure O'Sullivan's trying to get some outfielders.
You would think that. My biggest frustration with this entire season has been that Thompson is still in there. But yeah, you've got a senior in Jonathan Pigott who finished the second half of the season, hit like 350, 360 last year. And he's just wasting away on the bench. He plays better defense. He's faster. Mm-hmm. He's got a better arm. He's not going to strike out that many times. I don't understand why Pigott continues to sit the bench while you got a guy named Tyler Thompson wasting away. I understand against right-handed pitchers, you want a left-handed hitter up there. When that left-handed hitter
can't hit anybody
in the Little League, or what is it? What do you want? I don't get it. I don't know what it would take for Jonathan Pigott to get in there. It took Riley Cooper getting to a one strikeout every two at-bats. Maybe that's what we need to hope Thompson does for Pigott to get some at-bats. I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, Jonathan Pigott was great the postseason last year.
Oh, he was phenomenal. He made the SEC the All SEC tournament team last season. Hit two home runs, two of the longest home runs I saw at the tournament last year. He does everything, but yet he'll keep his mouth shut. And he keeps working, and he just keeps waiting for his opportunities. He's a really kind of the guy you need on that team that just kind of does whatever the team needs. But at some point, I kind of wish he'd get a little selfish. Maybe ask for some more playing time because it's
patience is not paying off for him.
No, not at all.
No, like I said earlier, I'd probably give him a 3 as well.
Yeah, we have nothing to add. I mean, like you said everything. Yeah. It's not very good.
I mean, defensively, he hasn't been bad. Not being too negative, I don't want to be all negative, but he hasn't been terrible defensively. He's been adequate out there. So
you liked Tyler Thompson before the season?
Yeah, I did. I'll admit, I did like him because when I did, I filled in for Kyle and Bobby.
Kyle Bastry and Bob Colombi, yeah. Guys who covered the baseball team the year before we did.
Yes, and I was there at the end of the year. Tyler Thompson had this great game.
The Kentucky game.
He had like two or three doubles or something like that. And I was like, this guy is pretty good. So this year, I was telling Tyler, I was like, you have to watch out for Tyler Thompson. He's going to have a good year. He's going to break out this season.
He put me on the Tyler Thompson watch list and it never really came through.
Because he was 4-for-4 that year. Yeah. That was a huge, I think he hit a home run. He tripled to the deepest part of the ball.
This guy's awesome.
We're like, okay. And then I remember that because that was right before the SEC tournament. So he was the DH at the SEC tournament the whole week. And I think he struck out almost every bat then too. It's just unbelievable, but I don't know. Maybe
he seems athletic. That's the thing. It seems like he can run pretty. Like he can run good. And you look at him, and he has the quote unquote tools.
Yeah,
but he just doesn't hit.
Well, his dad was Robbie Thompson, who's a San Francisco Giants player, very very talented player, an all-star in the major leagues. And so he's got that baseball pedigree, but it doesn't translate. And you keep waiting for it. I remember in the offseason, O'Sullivan kept saying, well, you know, we really like him, and we'll probably maybe pencil him in even as the number 5 hitter. He had a very good fall, which was with the wood bats against pitching. You're not supposed to have a very good offensive fall, but he did, and he put up big numbers in the scrimmages before the season, showed off some power and some I remember him hitting multiple, like probably more than two home runs in the spring scrimmages I went and watched, and now he's got two home runs all season. I don't know why it hasn't translated, but it hasn't, and it's time to make some changes.
Yeah, do me a favor while we're talking. Look up where he was hitting on look at the box score for the first game of the season and where he was hitting, because I think he was hitting
fifth.
Like 5.
I'm almost positive it was 5th.
Yeah.
Because they had Daniel.
Sullivan thought like me, see?
Yeah, well, he saw the Kentucky game, and then he was like, this kid's special. Well, it's interesting, because we were bringing up the quote-unquote baseball pedigree. But the two guys that have the richest baseball pedigrees are Tyler Thompson and Cody Dent, son of Bucky Dent. And Cody hasn't really played very much. And when he has played, he hasn't really impressed. But it's been a limited action, so that would be unfair to jump on him. But, I mean, obviously he hasn't done enough to get playing time. So the two guys that are the baseball pedigree guys don't really have much going for him.
Thompson did hit 5th, and he was 1-for-4 with, you guessed it, a single.
All right. How many strikeouts?
3-2.
Okay. All right, and I think I gave it a 6 before the season, is what you were saying?
Yeah, you and Bobby both gave him a 6. But you, in all fairness, you were rating Daniel Pigott at that position.
Right,
so.
Right. And now he's playing right field, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Center field, Matt Dendecker. I mean, great defensive player, great hitter, good batting average. Everything, I mean, he's done everything as you would want. Base dealer, best base dealer on the team. I mean, there's not much to say other than the fact that he's been fantastic this year. And I was a little apprehensive. I didn't know how he would bounce back from the junior season, which wasn't as good as he would have liked it to be. But I would say I'd give him an 8. I would put him up there in the Preston Tucker, Austin Maddox territory.
Yeah, I agree. I'd give him an 8 as well.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to give him a 9 just because of the defense also.
Yeah.
The defense is going to push that from an 8 to a 9 because he's been as a consistent hitter from a batting average perspective. He leads the team in batting average. He's hitting home runs. I think he's second on the team in home runs.
11
home runs. Second on the team in home runs. And he's just way better. He's the best or the second best defensive player on the team, depending on what you feel about Nolan Fontana. And so the bat plus defense plus the base stealing leads the team with 20 stolen bases. It's still 20, or did you get some this weekend?
You got one. 21 of 26.
He's got 21 stolen bases, leading the team by far.
Oh, yes.
He's got to be a 9.
I give him an 8.5. 8.5.
No, you're not playing the game. This isn't gymnastics.
But I round
or
up.
Ice skating.
I'll round up and give him a 9. Just because, like Tyler said, defensively, he's top 5 defensive center fielder in the nation. He's shown surprising power numbers. I mean, we know that he can get some pop in his bat, but to be second on the team in homers, even over Preston Tucker, pretty surprising. He hits for average, like 360. He's, like you said, he's been on the base path, so he really has the total package. So I guess I give him a 9.
I would go with a 9 just because it's the whole thing of does a 10 really exist? I feel like if
I believe that a 10 doesn't exist. I like to think, like, there's one out there, but we haven't seen it yet. Maybe
okay.
Bryce Harper's going to be a 10.
Bryce Harper would be an 11.
Bryce Harper might be an 11. I remember, and you ever watch the show 2 Days on MTV when they talked about the Hoover High football team?
No.
Neither one of you?
I've seen a couple
episodes. All right, well, I remember there's one of the characters, not a character, an actual person, named Reed Pete Smith, talking about women, and his quote was, "My girlfriend's real fine. I'll give her a 9. I ain't going to give her a dime, because there ain't no dimes out there in this world. If there was a dime, I'd be on it." So that's what I'm saying.
Wow.
Like, I take that. I think it's profound, and I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna run with that. I don't like giving out 10 just because a 10 has to be a Bryce Harper type player, and there's not very many of those, obviously.
I agree. So I'll go with a 9.
9s it is. 9s all across, Matt.
I'm trying to find a negative in what he does, and I can't find one. I guess if you had to nitpick, it would probably be the strikeouts.
Yeah,
he
that'd be great.
44, which is second on the team. Behind Tyler Thompson and Josh Adams at 45.
He's been way better than both those guys.
Yeah, it's not even
like
360.
You can overlook the strikeouts when he's hitting as well as he's been hitting and playing good defense and doing all the other things he's been doing.
Second best on base percentage at .433, slugging .571. I mean, he's really, really good. He does everything.
I feel like he makes one great catch a weekend. Like, you're just like, wow. You know?
Sometimes two or three.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember one game, my dad was actually watching on TV while I was there covering, and he texted me at one point after weekend, what was it?
Arkansas.
SC weekend. It was Arkansas weekend. When he made, like, 2 or 3 straight diving catches in the outfield, like, multiple, like, every inning, he was making a great play. And my dad texted me, he was like, this is just unbelievable to watch.
And that's why people say that he's such a high draft, because he's got all the tools. People don't know. I doubt the power really develops at the major league level with a wood bat. I don't think that'll really be there. But he's got the ability to hit for average. He's got a good eye at the plate. He plays great defense. He's got a good enough arm to play center. He's got all the tools to be a very high draft pick. I think he made a very, very good decision to come back in school.
Oh, yeah. He's a 16th round pick last year for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
The signing bonus won't be where it could be just based on the fact he's a senior and doesn't really have any leverage.
Incentive,
but he's still going to be a very, very high draft pick. And an example of one of those guys who comes back and has a great year. And in a year from now, we could be here talking about Josh Adams doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. I actually was talking to the editor of Baseball America and was kind of asking him, where do you think Matt Dendecker will go in the draft? And said he's kind of hard to evaluate. I don't know exactly where he'll go, but he has a good chance of being the first senior drafted. And also, he's like, if he goes after round 5, he's the biggest value in the draft far and away. He thinks he can go like as high as the second round.
Wow. That's what people said last year, too, was that top 5 round pick was for him, and then he slipped to the 16th. People thought he still might go that high just based on the fact that the tools were there and they knew that he could hit, and it obviously just got in his head. But, yeah, all the upside in the world here, that's the thing, is he's still pretty raw. There's still a lot of work you can do with him, make him a better player.
I'm glad we're doing this because I don't think I was really fleshing this out, but now that I think about it, like I'm sure he's, if I'm ranking players, he's the best player on the team this year. He's really had the best season of anybody.
Yeah, I agree. I really didn't think of it that way, but yeah, he's had the best year.
Okay, what did me and Bob say at the beginning of the year of Matt?
Bob did not rate him. He just went off on it.
Oh yeah, Bob went off on a tangent, which he frequently does. Right after saying I'm absurd, he just went wild, I'm sure. So Bob gave him a 0. Bob's way off. What did I give him?
You gave him a 6.
Okay, all right. Yeah, and like at the beginning of the year when I was talking about it, obviously it was because I wasn't sure how he'd bounce back in the junior year. Clearly he has.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to right field. I guess you have Daniel Piggott in right. Made a great play last weekend against Georgia, which was a fun weekend, or 2 weekends ago. That was a fun weekend. But got Daniel Piggott and I guess Cam Washington for a while before he ran into a wall in what was described by U.S. trainer as the closest thing to a car crash we can simulate. He was out for the season after running into that wall with a torn hamstring. But what do you think?
I go with a 6 here. I really like what he does. He's kind of the same guy as Den Dekker in the field and on the base pass. He's a very smart base runner. He can steal some bases for you. He plays good defense, a good enough arm. I'd just like to see maybe the average be a little bit higher. He hits for surprising power, which is kind of shocked me. He only has one home run, I believe, this year. Yeah, he has one home run and 21 RBI. So I really think that the power is something that could come along for him. He's got the 10 doubles, though. Good for, I believe, fourth on the team. So, you know, that's always there for him. I just really like what he does. I think he's one of those guys that has a lot of intangibles. I know the coaches like him a lot in the way that he's the hustle guy. He's got a really good speed-power combination, which Sullivan's talked about. Again, even though the one home run is there, which really does surprise me. I know he hit 3 last season and still kind of seemed like he should have had more. So I feel like that could be coming. But, again, I think it's probably a product of fewer at-bats since Cam Washington was in there earlier in the year against right-handed pitching. So I'll go with a 6 on him. I'm really confident in him in the field. I like his defense and his bat. I just wish those power numbers would kind of go up a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I give him a 5. I really don't have much to say about the position. Cam Washington, he did a nice job early on in the year until he got injured. He's, you know, pretty good freshman. And Daniel Pates filled in nicely. I mean, he hasn't lit the world on fire or anything, but he's filled in and he's done a serviceable job. So, I mean, I'll give the position a 5.
Yeah, I think I'll give it a 6. Pretty good job out of Daniel this year. Not great. I'd say the corner outfielding position has been the weakness of the team. As we touched on about Tyler Thompson. But I do want to talk about that. What I was talking about a couple minutes ago was the diving catch he made in the 9th inning of the Georgia game on the Friday night game. UF was down, I think, 2-1 at that point. And it was kind of comical because Georgia's the worst team in the SEC. They were losing. Daniel Pickett makes a diving catch. The place goes nuts. This is to end the inning, and they rally, and they end winning 3-2. But as soon as it happened, Clint Franklin, the reliever who never plays, shoots out of the dugout and just starts hugging everyone, fist pounding everyone, gives a huge chest bump to Daniel Pickett, turns around to the crowd and goes like Tim Tebow, raising his arms, trying to get the crowd to go wild. And I thought, like, this is something Tim Tebow used to do in, like, national championship games. And Clint Franklin's doing it against the worst team. And I thought that was one of the funniest moments of the year. Which brings me to our favorite moments of the season. Everyone just go around and kind of talk about what we've seen. I mean, there's been 50-something games. We've seen a lot of cool stuff happen this year. We've seen a lot of boring things happen as well. But I think we should just talk about what we think were some of the coolest things that we've seen this year. Cody?
I've actually got 2 I'm going to go with here. One of them, I think, was pretty awesome because it happened on ESPN, on the main national channel with college baseball. Brian Johnson got the Sunday start for Florida after they had already won the series up 2-0. And Johnson threw a great game, 6 2/3 innings, I believe it was, and was just dominant. And then hit a grand slam and kind of pushed Florida ahead. So that was really cool to see that. That's kind of when the Brad Wilkerson comparisons, everybody making those comparisons, kind of came out a little bit. So that would be my first moment.
False. Because before that even happened, I'd already written an article about Brad Wilkerson, interviewing Brad Wilkerson.
I forgot about
Boom. You're forgetting about all the articles.
Touché.
I read.
All right. All of them. Boom. So, number 2 would be Tommy Toledo's return against FAU. It was really awesome. Seeing him kind of run out of the bullpen against FAU, I believe, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Just kind of looking at the crowd, and it was funny because, like, one little section started, like, a standing ovation, and then, like, someone on the other side of the stadium, like, everybody started realizing it at the same time. And then it was, like, a full-blown, like, standing ovation for a guy that, like, it's kind of like Florida baseball. People, it doesn't really seem like a lot of people know a lot about it at some points. But a moment like that, where like someone goes through something as traumatic as he did, really kind of brings it home. And it was really, really just a cool moment. And I know Toledo even said he got goosebumps during that. So that was really, really awesome to see.
Literally everyone on the team that you talked to afterward either said they got chills or goosebumps.
Yeah.
So I mean, I felt it too. Like I felt like you're right. When I was watching that, I'm like, this is probably one of the coolest things I've ever actually covered. Like, I don't care. Like, it probably was one of the biggest moments I've ever covered. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to cover football. You're going to cover bigger beats. And there's going to be things that are bigger than that. But that was just so cool to see him. Like, especially this year. Like, when I heard about, because I actually wasn't there when it happened. When I heard that he had the ball hit him in the face. And as hard as he did, like, he was covered in blood. I was like, all right, he's done for the year. And that sucks for him. Because he had actually missed the season prior to this with a shoulder injury, right? Yeah. So, I mean, it was just one of those things where you're just like, oh, he's done for the year. But seeing him come back on the same year, 2 months later, and pitching pretty well was definitely cool. Anthony?
If I were there, I would probably pick Tommy Toledo. But I was not there. I was stuck in the office. Tyler,
yeah, I was running
Tyler
wild
was
by myself. I was not working in the office. I was out doing some rubber shoe reporting.
But I'll pick the, when Maddox hit the game-winning home run in, against Mississippi State in the first SC series of the season, I think it was. I think it was in the eighth inning. It was raining. It was perfect. And he hit, a two-run homer to three-run homer to put the Gators up, and the Gators eventually won. Chapman probably got the save, as usual. So I've enjoyed watching Maddux this whole freshman year, but that bat really stands out to me. So
yeah, I need to address something I just said. I actually don't know what rubber shoe reporting is. I think I'm going to say shoe leather reporting. Is that the term?
You can coin rubber shoe if you want right now.
That sounds like something I would do if I was doing like some undercover stuff, like I was dressed as a clown. I'm not dressed like a clown yet this season to do some reporting. So I wasn't actually doing rubber shoe reporting. I was actually just at the field reporting. Sorry about that. But anyway, my favorite moment, actually probably not the coolest moment, but definitely the funniest moment in my opinion, was when UF was playing Arkansas in Game 3. It was the rubber match. It was a rubber match of the series. UF lost the first game, won the second game. The third game, we had like a three-hour rain delay, which sucked because we were all in the press box for 3 hours before the game started. But it was also kind of cool because, we had electricity. It wasn't that bad. Some people were watching Hulu. We were watching the Heat game on TV. They were playing the Celtics. It was actually pretty fun. They gave us ice cream. Like, I can't complain at all about that. I enjoyed that three-hour break. That's not my favorite moment season. My favorite moment was what happened in the ninth inning of that game. UF was tied in the ninth. They blew a lead in the eighth. Or they blew a lead in the ninth.
I believe it was the eighth because Colin Kuhn hit a solo homer off Kevin Chapman.
Okay. Anyway, they blew a lead. And so it's a tied game in the ninth. UF, Brian Johnson gets on first. He leads off with a hit. They take him out because he's slow. He's not Austin Maddox slow, but he's slow. They took him out to put Cody Dent in. And Dent ended up on second. And then Mike Zunino hit a little blooper to center. Dent starts running third, kind of late, thinking it's not going to drop. It does drop. He gets third. Third base coach Craig Bell tells him to go home, which is probably not a good call. But he ended up sprinting home. The catcher gets the ball. It's going to be a play at the plate. The catcher tags Cody, and Cody runs past the plate. Like, that's one of those things where he runs around it, trying to get out of the way of the catcher who has the ball in front of the plate. The catcher tags him. The umpire yells, safe. Cody isn't even on home plate yet, and the umpire's already calling safe. And he's just been tagged. Like, it's the opposite of what that call should have been. Cody ends up on the ground. The catcher ends up on the ground. Neither one realizing what call's been made. They both do this dramatic crawl to the plate. Cody ends up reaching for the plate, gets tagged a second time before getting to the plate, then touches the plate. The umpires keep signaling safe the entire time. I don't know how he was calling safe the entire time because like Cody had never even come close to the plate. The obvious theory is they were in that three-hour rain delay along with us, and they were not about to go into an extra inning game, so he just called him safe. And then as soon as it happened, Florida's bench clears. They're all celebrating. Arkansas's bench clears. They're all yelling. The coach for Arkansas just goes wild on the umpire, just yelling at him the whole time. And, like, the whole time it's happening, we're like, what just happened? Like, I'm pretty sure he was out, but we can't really tell. I think it was a bad call. We don't have a replay. We can't tell. One of the photographers that was there was doing one of those, like, photo moments where you can do, like, every 0.1 seconds it takes a photo. And so while everyone else, I actually had a knee problem or an ankle problem at that time, so I couldn't go down and do interviews. I was stuck in the press box. And so while everyone was doing interviews, the photographer showed me, like, it's, like, the sequence of pictures, and you clearly saw that he was tagged out, and then while he's getting tagged out, you can see the umpire signaling safe, and then you see him fall on the ground, get tagged a second time, and then touch the plate. And it was probably I thought it was just the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen, but good for that umpire, because that umpire just wanted to get out, he got what he wanted. You can control a game as an umpire, and he did. He got what he needed.
Blown call. There's no doubt about it. But Florida won the series, so I think they would have taken it. But it was hilarious to see how many things were happening in like different areas of the field during that. The Florida celebration is happening. We're like 5 feet away from Arkansas arguing. Dave Van Horn is going after this umpire. I've never seen anything like that.
Dave Van Horn's the Arkansas coach.
Yeah, excuse me. So he's usually a very mild-mannered guy, just laid back. He is going after this coach because because they know how big that series was. It was two top-10 teams. And that series actually kind of started Arkansas going down the tubes a little bit, and now to the point where they aren't a national seed, and they're kind of struggling a little bit. So that was a very big kind of key moment for both teams at this point in the season.
It was pandemonium on the field. There was so many things happening at one time. I just sat back and watched it all unfold. It was great.
I even think it was starting to rain again at that
point. Yeah, well, that's another thing. It looked like it was about to start raining also. So that kind of plays into this theory. Is this umpire's like, let's just call him safe, get out of here. Because if it starts raining and we have to wait for another three innings or whatever, this is going to be bad. And he knew these kids had finals the next day, too. Josh Adams had a final for his ship, the Holocaust, the next day, and Josh Adams needed to get out of there.
What a guy. That umpire's a hero.
That umpire's like, Josh needs to get out, right? Josh has got a lot of studying on Hitler to do, so get him out of here. And so let's move on now. We've heard of the All-Madden team. We've heard of all the other things, but nobody loves SEC baseball like Cody Jones, so we're going to do the All-Cody Jones team. And that's the best players in the SEC. The All-SEC team, the real one, actually got released today. But this one, I think, is a much more objective one anyway. So, Cody, why don't you present your Cody Jones All-SEC team?
Well, like you said, the real one did come out today. So we're just going to have to go honor system. And everybody trust me that this was made before that. And I'm proud to announce that I nailed the entire infield. Micah Gibbs behind the plate from LSU. I think he's phenomenal. Just a catcher that has very good at handling and pitching staff and extremely good behind the plate defensively as well. He's hitting over 400. Love what he does. Hunter Morris, the first baseman from Auburn, tremendous. He's actually named SEC Player of the Year, and I fully back that one. He's easily the most intimidating hitter in the SEC, kind of is the middle of the lineup guy for the Auburn offense, which puts up ridiculous numbers. Second base, I went with Anthony Gomez from Vanderbilt, who kind of a weak pool here. I think Josh Adams would have won this easily if he just had an average season by his standards. But Gomez is the guy I decided to go with, a freshman who put up big numbers. Actually hitting about 450 when Vanderbilt came to Florida here at about the midway point of the year. Josh Rutledge, I like a lot from Alabama, the shortstop, hit over 300, ridiculous power, and very good in the field as well. Zach Cox, I think, was probably the second. We didn't see the voting, but I'm sure he finished second for SEC Player of the Year. He's a third baseman. He kind of moved all around for him, but that's where his most consistent position is, probably at the next level as well. He's actually a draft-eligible sophomore, so he'll be drafted very highly. The outfield is where I struggled quite a bit. I wanted to fit Matt Dendecker in there somehow, but I just couldn't find a way to do it. I went with Taylor Dugas as one of the outfielders from Alabama, their leadoff hitter. Some just unbelievable on-base percentage, close to 500, if not above 500, like it was three-quarters of the way through the year. He's just kind of the catalyst for them, their leadoff hitter.
Did Tyler Thompson make the team?
Tyler Thompson made the second team, just missed the cutoff. The other outfielder I went with, or the second one, was P.J. Polk, who didn't make the SEC first team, but I just like what he does a lot. He's from Tennessee, just an awesome speed, power guy, RBI, great defensive outfielder. I like what he does a lot as well. Brian Fletcher from Auburn was my third guy, big-time home run hitter, kind of provides some protection to Hunter Morris in that lineup. The DH, I like Connor Powers a lot from Mississippi State. We got to see him in that series that Anthony was talking about a little bit earlier. He's just a phenomenal hitter who has absolutely zero protection in that Mississippi State lineup. So he hit close to 400, over 15 home runs, just did it all for that team. My two starting pitchers, Drew Pomeranz is unquestionably on that team. Shut down a lot of people this year. He's unbelievable. Last year, as his sophomore season, he threw the most impressive game I saw the Florida face all last year here in Gainesville. Friday night before the spring games, the stands were packed, ton of people here, and he just took all the momentum out of Florida's dugout from the very beginning. Drew Smyly I went with instead of Blake Cooper. Blake Cooper was named the second pitcher on the All-SEC team. I went with Smyly just because he impressed me. I saw him pitch against Florida, and Cooper pitched against Florida, and Smyly was just a lot better. He's a three-pitch guy who really just kind of dominated them. And then my relief pitcher was Kevin Chapman from Florida. I was a little tempted to go with Matty Ott, but he's been getting hit hard lately. His numbers from LSU, his numbers are a little inflated because of that start he had against Florida, where I believe he gave up 8 earned runs going that start and gave up 9 in about 3 innings against Florida. So his numbers are up, but he has been getting hit hard a lot recently, whereas Kevin Chapman is about a 1.1 ERA guy. So he's been lights out for Florida all year round. So that is the all Cody Jones SEC team.
Who do we got for coach?
See, this is where it's a little weird. I think I actually would have gone with John Pulaski from Auburn. Kevin O'Sullivan ended up winning the award from Florida and deservingly so. But I still think I would have gone with Auburn. I think we were talking about this a little before we started.
You can't say deservingly so and then say, but I wouldn't have given it to him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Touche.
Just proceed.
That's just me talking.
There was no deservingly so there. It's just, that's just the guy who's been covering the team long enough and does not want to piss off Kevin. He's clearly listening to this right before his first game in the playoffs.
And can you blame him?
Probably gets amped. He listens to the Alligator Sports podcast.
He did a great job, absolutely. Young team for Florida, but the talent was there for Florida. I think it was just a matter of getting some of those freshmen acclimated, which they did a great job of. But with Auburn, John Pawlowski, this team was awful last season. They ended a seven-year stretch of not making the SEC tournament this season. Not only did they end that, they're the number two seed, and they won the SEC West off the heels of a sweep at Ole Miss, where Florida got beat out of three games. So I go with Pawlowski. I think he's done a tremendous job there, and I think once he starts to get a couple more years of his pitching recruits in there, they'll only be a lot better. But that offense right now is just, I would take that offense, honestly, over any offense in the country right now.
I think we, as people who were covering the Gators, really missed out on the fact that UF didn't play Auburn this year. I would have loved to watch Auburn, obviously, as we revealed from the all-Cody Jones team. A lot of good players on that team, obviously. And I think the Gators dodged a bullet from that, but I think we would have all enjoyed that. And, I mean, maybe maybe they get to play in the SEC tournament.
Yeah.
Which brings me, let's talk about UF's matchups this weekend, potentially. I mean, first of all, they're going to play LSU today at 4:30. LSU's an 8 seed.
Well,
5:30 Eastern. Oh, it's 4:30 Eastern.
Yeah. 4:30 Central.
4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern.
Yeah.
I forgot what time zone I'm there. Okay. So yeah, I mean, LSU defending national champions, and Florida gets them in the first round of the SEC tournament. As the number one seed, Florida's the number one seed, and they're playing the defending national champions. Which kind of shows you how far
the SEC.
That and how far LSU has fallen to. LSU has definitely fallen.
I think that could possibly be their hardest matchup in the tournament. Just because I know LSU's been struggling a lot, but LSU knows that if they want to even host the regional, they have to win this SEC tournament, basically. They have to win it all. So, if anything, the fact that I was looking at their last series, it was against Mississippi State, but they did score. They scored 32 runs in three games, which, if they're hitting, and you have Ronaldo on the mound, who's struggling too, but, you know, Ronaldo's, you know, we all know he has talent. If they're hitting, that's going to be a very tough game for the Gators, I think.
I agree with you. I think this is probably the toughest draw they could have had. But it was kind of like pick your poison going down that last day of the SEC play. When you're Florida, would either play LSU in the first round or Alabama, which when you play Alabama in Hoover, it is home field advantage is a huge understatement there, because there's no one that shows up at Alabama's home games. But in Hoover, that place is packed. So first of all, that's going to be a really unique matchup tomorrow or this morning, Auburn, Alabama.
We're recording this podcast on Tuesday.
Yeah.
This is for Wednesday.
So it will be this morning, as it's already happened.
It will have already happened. Either that, or you're drinking your coffee and listening to us breakfast with the alligator. And if that's the case, you can probably watch that game while listening to us talk about that game.
True. So either way, I think Florida would have had a tough first round matchup. But I think there's a lot right on the line with this for Anthony Renato. I obviously he has struggled big time coming into the season. He was thought of as a top five pick in the draft, and he's dropped down to probably middle of the first round, if not bottom. So there's going to be a ton of scouts at this tournament. There always are. It is an unbelievable environment, and the scouts come to see all these guys play in one location. And Renato knows that, so he's going to have to step his game up a little bit. He knows all the money that for him that is riding on the line with this game. And Coach Palmieri has also said that they'll probably go first guy of the bullpen with Matty Ott, who's when he's on their closer, who's just lights out. So I think Florida. If I'm giving my opinion on this game right now, I think Florida probably loses it, but. It all honestly comes down to Anthony Renato. If he's the guy that he was last season, I think Florida loses. But if he's the guy that Florida saw a couple weeks ago, I think Florida probably runs away with this one.
And this is a double elimination tournament. So even if Florida lost that game, they would still stay in Hoover for at least another day.
Yeah.
Second round, they'll play either Vanderbilt or Arkansas, depending on what UF does and depending on what Vanderbilt and Arkansas does. I was like, because at the time I was kind of looking at it, like LSU. They've been so inconsistent, but I feel like Vanderbilt gave UF a run for the. They definitely shut UF down on that Friday, that Sunday. Who was on the mound that Sunday?
That was Jack Armstrong.
Yeah, he shut them down.
He's their number two now, and that's probably who Florida would be facing. Is they'll throw Sonny Gray, who's their ace in the first game. So Florida might actually see Armstrong again.
Mm-hmm. And Arkansas is obviously a good team as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Like we've said, I mean, UF snuck away with that game could be in the rubber match in the Arkansas series that they probably should have gone to extra innings.
They could have easily lost 2 out of 3 in that series. So, I mean, Tyler's correct when he says that, I mean, both these teams have obviously had better years than LSU. LSU just scares me just the fact that they need this tournament. You know, like we said, Florida has clinched basically national seed and all that. But LSU needs this tournament to go, and I think that means something.
I agree. And it's still a largely veteran team. If not veteran, it's guys who are sophomores who went through the whole College World Series run last year for LSU. So they're used to this big-time environment, all these kind of things. So I think that is a really dangerous game. But looking at that second game, I think Florida may get a little, not lucky, but may have some benefits to this second game, and that they'll be missing Drew Smiley from Arkansas and Sonny Gray from Vanderbilt, who were both on the second team All-SEC list that was released today. So Florida gets a little bit lucky there, and both teams have kind of struggled recently with that number two. Armstrong got hit hard this weekend, and Mike Bolsinger or Brett Eibner, whoever they go with as their number two for Arkansas, they both struggled a little bit. So I think Florida may win that game with Panagiotis probably pitching for the Gators. But
who do you think is Florida going to throw today?
They will throw Brian Johnson. That's why he threw one inning in Saturday's game, was to hold him for this game and let him be as fresh as possible. So that shows you, if nothing else, that Florida's going into this with the mindset that they want to win this tournament.
I guess one thing is, obviously, they held him out, obviously, to keep him fresh, and they'd already clinched the SEC at that point because they'd won the first two games in South Carolina series last weekend. But why go with him on the first game as opposed to Panagiotis?
I think the benefit is it lets you keep Panagiotis on regular or supposed regular rest. You don't cut another day out of that week. He started last Thursday at South Carolina. He'll start this Thursday at the SEC tournament. Same thing with Hudson Randall, who threw this past Friday. Friday as well. So I think that works out really well, especially going into the postseason. You get to keep these guys on regular rest and not have to throw a ton of pitches to get through a game and risk them not being ready for a regional.
Johnson did have some success that you said earlier against LSU earlier in the year. So,
pitching 6 2/3 inning strong and hitting the grand slam is pretty successful. So, yeah, I mean, he has a good track record against LSU, obviously. This bracket is very confusing to me, though. If you're listening to this podcast, I would suggest you pause the podcast right now and go at least find a PDF of this bracket, because honestly, when I'm looking at it, I just can't really make heads or tails of it, to be frank, because it's double elimination, so you would play LSU in the first round, and then they would play either Vanderbilt or Arkansas, but then at that point, they could very well end up playing some team from the top half of the bracket, which is considered bracket one or whatever. So I don't really know who they could end up playing after that. But I mean, what are some of these other teams obviously to look out for?
I really like Auburn a lot, but the question there is what happens when they run into a hot pitching staff that can shut down their offense, because they don't have the pitching. There's no question about that.
They could play Ole Miss in the second round.
Exactly. They could, and I know Pomeranz is throwing game one, but they could run into Aaron Barrett in game two, who's been very hit or miss as well. But so that's interesting to me. I'm really interested to see how South Carolina rebounds, because if they go 2-0, they probably are not a national seed. But if they have a good weekend, I think they can solidify that. And also more interesting in that is they get Ole Miss on day one. Ray Tanner's already announced, the South Carolina coach has already announced that they're going with a midweek guy. Or it's either Tyler Webb, who's a freshman left-hander who kind of has been their Sunday guy, either him or another midweek guy that they've used throughout the year. So it's almost like they're kind of forfeiting that game. Mm-hmm. And
they're waving white flag a little bit.
Yeah, and kind of hoping to ride Blake Cooper and Sam Dyson the next two games and ride that into a deeper run. But that's kind of playing with fire a little bit when you're playing with four as much as South Carolina is, the potential to play at home all the way up until Omaha.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I think we talked about, obviously Brian Johnson would be slated to go today, and then Alex Panagiotis Thursday, and then Hudson Randall Friday. But then after that, what does UF do?
That's the wild card. Do you go Toledo? Do you go DeSclafani, Miranda? I mean, you've got possibility. It's all about trying to get guys innings. I would kind of be stupid, but when you're kind of playing with house money like Florida is right now, do you maybe go Miranda and just try to throw him out there and say, go figure it out now? I mean, I know that doesn't sound like it makes much sense with the way he's been pitching. But
they could go with Larson, which they've used a lot in the midweek game. He's pitched well lately, so I mean, that's another option.
I guess, I mean, I'd be interested to see how strong Tommy is at this point.
Yeah.
I remember after his first start, he said, I feel great and everything. Of course, he's going to say that. O'Sullivan said, I want to work him back up. He made the comparison that this is a kid that's essentially back in spring training.
Right.
He's not ready to be a starting pitcher, like, in the extent of going 5, 6, 7 innings. But, I mean, I'd be interested to see if he can go, because I think, honestly, if he's healthy, he's probably got the best stuff on the staff.
That's probably what I think what they would do in game four, is maybe let him do what we saw him do against UNF, go 2 or 3 innings, try to extend him a little bit more, and then maybe you go to a guy like Larson, or a guy that can go eat up 4 innings for you.
Yeah.
So I don't. That is really interesting. Another guy, Paco Rodriguez, got a start against FAU a couple weeks ago. He could be in the mix as well. But I really like what he's giving them out of the bullpen. So I think they probably would want to stick him in there and keep him as a left-handed strikeout guy that they lost with Miranda's struggles.
Yeah, this tournament gets really dicey once you get deep into it, because you got to figure, no, it's going to be one of the situations where everyone's using their big guns early.
Yeah.
Once you get into those semifinals and finals, all of a sudden, you don't have anything. It's basically like, who's got the best bullpen, really?
They could, I mean, if Dawson has a short start on, I guess, today, there's a chance he could go Sunday, you think, if they make it to the finals?
That would be really, I think that would be the interesting thing, because if Sullivan's saying, and obviously he's a competitor, and he wants to win this tournament, but do you risk that?
Yeah.
I think that would kind of be, that would show you how serious they're taking this tournament, is if they do that, because that's certainly capable, possible.
Yeah.
I know, but Johnson's got the arm to do that. He's been able to bounce back in the past pretty quickly, so I don't know.
I think they should do that, though. Well, I think that'd be stupid, just because you're really getting nothing out of this. UF has a national seed. Mm-hmm. They're going to be playing in Gainesville as long as they win. They'll play in Gainesville from the regional, the super regional, and then go to Omaha for the first time since 2005. But the worst thing you could do in this tournament is get a player who you're playing a lot and injure him to the point where you can't. I mean, you're losing one of your weapons if you do that.
Best case scenario, I think, for Florida, obviously, is you win the first two. If you win Wednesday and Thursday,
you get Friday off.
So you rest your whole bullpen. You probably go Hudson Randall on Saturday and see what happens there. I think it's a minimum 4 or 5 games you would play. So if it's 4, then maybe you go Toledo in the championship or go him in the semifinal. So there's all sorts of possibilities, but obviously that is kind of precluded by them winning.
Yeah, if you only play 4 games or whatever, then you're fine because you have to used to obviously using that bullpen in the starting kind of situation. Like in the midweek games, a lot of times they'll start a reliever, let him go 1 or 2 innings, throw in another reliever, let him go an inning or two, and just keep doing that over and over again. They could afford to do that for a game, that would keep everyone healthy, and they'd still have a chance to win it. But they play more than that, I don't think they have a chance.
I agree, and that's what's interesting. I think that's probably what you'll see in the championship game if Florida were to make it that far, is a little bullpen by committee. Jeff Barfield could eat some innings for you. There's a lot of possibilities, and it's lucky for Florida, as we talked about earlier, that bullpen has turned it on and has finally given them some quality innings. So that's what I think you'll probably see out of this weekend if Florida were to make it that far.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, it wouldn't be an Alligator Sports podcast without an awkward transition, so there you go about that one. We're going to wrap this thing up with some Gator guarantees. Thank you for listening so far. Anthony, what are you going with on your Gator guarantee?
We touched on that a little bit earlier, but I'm going to guarantee that the Gators will lose in the first round to LSU. LSU, like I said, has started hitting. They scored, like I said earlier, 32 runs in the last series in 3 games. But really, they only scored 1 in the series finale. So 31 of those runs came in the first 2 games of the series, which is pretty impressive. And I feel like they're going to take tomorrow's game. I don't think that the Gators are taking this tournament too seriously.
LSU has a lot more to gain.
Exactly. And, I mean, they're still a good team. They've been struggling a lot, but they're still, they won the championship last season. So I'll go with that. I think they'll lose the opener.
What was your guarantee last time, 2 weeks ago? Do you remember?
Oh, UF would pass South Carolina in the standings.
The previous weekend. And they ended up tied
with them after the weekend.
UF swept Georgia, which was something that they had. If you lose a game in Georgia, just give up. And then South Carolina swept Arkansas, right?
Yeah. So I was banking on the fact that they would maybe just take 2 out of 3 from Arkansas and UF would sweep Georgia, but
it didn't happen like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Cody, what is your Gator guarantee? Your first ever Gator guarantee.
First ever. There's a lot of pressure here. I'm going to go with the fact that Josh Adams makes the SEC All-Tournament team. I think he's going to continue to stay hot. This weekend, obviously, it's going to come against quality pitching. It's Anthony Renato and whoever Arkansas or Vanderbilt would throw out there. But I think he gets it done. I think he's kind of turned that corner. His at-bats this weekend at South Carolina looked completely different to me. He looked like a different hitter, the guy that we've seen hitting for the past 2 years, during his first 2 years. So I think he's going to continue to stay hot and be that second baseman. I know we talked about during the All-SEC part of the show that there's really not a standout second baseman in the SEC right now. So I think if Adams puts together a good weekend, I'm going to say that he makes the all-tournament team there.
All right. And my Gator guarantee is that the pitcher's clock is going to be the biggest story coming out of the SEC tournament this weekend. For those that don't know, they're going to try to speed this game up a little bit. There's only 30 minutes between each game of the tournament. And I guess, you don't really warm up, right?
Right.
You don't warm up. You pretty much just go out there and play. That way, because there's a lot of games being played each day. And also, they're going to put in a pitcher's clock. It's going to be this huge clock right behind the catcher that the pitcher has to look at before throwing. And do you know how much time they have?
15 seconds between pitches.
Is that, as soon as you throw it, or is it,
You get the ball back.
I think it's once you get the ball back, right? Yeah. You have to
release
it. Now, the benefit to Florida, that doesn't affect them whatsoever. That's what O'Sullivan preaches, is you get on the mound, you get the ball, you throw, and you keep the momentum, you keep the hitter uncomfortable, that kind of thing. So
I think we'll benefit from a lot of watching these games.
That'd be great.
I'm telling you, the past 2 years, I can count probably on two hands as many times as I've been there longer than like one in the morning. It is unbelievable. These games go on so long, so many pitching changes. But they've made the changes this year. It's usually an hour between games. Now it's 30 minutes.
That's great, they're trying
to speed this thing up. The pitch clock, I think, is an interesting thing, if nothing else. But I think the 30 minutes in between is the key part to keep us there until maybe 11 o'clock.
I think the pitching clock is just going to be a lot of fun. I hope it's like this gigantic clock that they have to look at and it's just counting down. It's got to be huge. And then it makes a really loud buzzer, like a shot clock. Like, and you could be mid pitch. It's gonna be like, oh, you have 15 seconds to throw it. But obviously, Jesse probably throw it around 13 seconds, because if you throw it at 15, your rhythm's gonna get messed up by this rooster that's gonna be crowing or something ridiculous like that.
What happens if they go longer?
It's a ball.
Is it a ball?
I think it's a ball. But my question is, what happens if
that could make
it a strike?
Yeah.
And the ball's hit, and say the guy hits a home run or something like that. I guess you could probably take the outcome.
That's probably. What if you hit it and it's like a line drive out?
Then you would probably want the ball.
So you're thinking we actually don't know the rules here, but you're thinking that like you're basically choosing one or the other.
So the hitting team says either we'll take the hit or the home run or whatever, or we'll take it as a ball and keep the bat going.
This is gonna cause problems.
It is.
It's gonna be a lot of fun to watch, though. I'm excited about it.
You could guarantee that it would be done with after the first day.
They can't do that. It's going through the whole tournament for sure.
It's
gonna
be a disaster if so.
Oh gosh. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to this whole thing. It's kind of a longer podcast than we've been doing lately, but we actually had some interesting things to say this time, I hope. Thank you for coming and listening to us. And if you have any feedback, any ideas, anything you like, anything you dislike, please send that feedback to podcast@alligator.org.
End the show, Barry!